Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thought these guys spent every waking hour of their lives doing manly things like watching sports while yelling at their TVs, shaving with straight razors, and revving their V8 truck engines. Well, yeah, think again. It's time for Mackie and Judd to turn in their man cards. This is Rom-Com Rewind. Obviously, this is very manly.
And we have breaking Mackie and Judd movie review news. Breaking news! As of this weekend, this Memorial Day weekend 2023, we now have all 87 movie reviews that we have done dating back to the 2020, like March, April 2020, all available in one podcast feed. Movie reviews with Mackie and Judd, Apple, Spotify, I believe soon on ScoreNorth.com. But you can go binge because people, it's funny because like a lot of people maybe have discovered our regular show or Purple Daily over the last couple of years. And then they stumble into the movie reviews and they say, you guys should do this movie. Like we actually did that one 3 years ago. You can go binge all of them dating back all 87 action movie rewinds, rom-com rewinds, sports movie rewinds. And if you could give us a 5-star rating and a positive review on the movie reviews with Mackie and Judd podcast feeds, you can help spread the word about this delicious content that we put out every week. So are you guys ready for a deep dive into a movie that neither one of you had ever seen start to finish before? The Notebook, 2004.
Very ready for this.
Yep. I am ready. And I was actually surprised by my reaction to a large part of this film. So
okay,
let's get to it.
So we'll go through sort of the movie summary and some production notes, and then we'll get to our opinions and statements about this movie. And for Rom-Com Rewinds, we also have a couple categories at the end where we rank some of the different things. So here's the summary, boys. In 1940s South Carolina, mill worker Noah Calhoun, played by Ryan Gosling, and rich girl Allie, played by Rachel McAdams, are desperately in love, but her parents don't approve. When Noah goes off to serve in World War II, it seems to mark the end of their love affair. In the interim, Allie becomes involved with another man, played by James Marsden. But when Noah returns to their small town years later, on the cusp of Allie's marriage, it soon becomes clear that their romance is anything but over. 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. Here's the critics' consensus from Rotten Tomatoes. It's hard not to admire its unabashed sentimentality, but The Notebook is too clumsily manipulative to rise above its melodramatic cliches. $29 million budget turned into $118 million at the box office. Yep. And record-breaking DVD sales. In fact, Declan, didn't you watch this on DVD?
My fiance had it in her parents' house. She has a whole rack of DVD, like I'm talking hundreds of DVDs.
Oh, do they still have the display rack of DVDs?
Yeah, I would say it's more like a bookshelf. It's not like the classic, like, you know, rack of DVDs, but it's like a bookshelf of all DVDs. And when, you know, we're going through this internet kerfuffle, I was like, what are we going to do here? And she's like, oh, yeah. I have this on DVD. It's one of my favorite movies. And she has actually said she has been waiting of all the previous boyfriends and now her only fiance, knock on wood, that she's always wanted to watch this movie with her significant other, and I was the first one to get to do it.
Wow.
It's one of her favorite movies of all time.
Wow. Okay, before I continue with some of the movie notes here, any tears?
She cried four times. I welt up at the end.
How can you not get a little emotional toward the end, man?
I'm going to save it for my first statement, okay. But
that's
yes.
My favorite.
Okay. Yeah, she cried, I think, four different times. We were on separate couches to start this movie, and I even sent a picture to Phil. Vinny, like, confiscated four pillows on the other side of the couch, so there was no room for Dex tweets. And then, like, about three-fourths of the movie, I went over and sat by her, and she's like, why are you going to sit next to me at the most climactic and emotional part of this entire movie?
I'm here to support. Yeah.
I'm trying.
Sorry, honey, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, this movie starred Ryan Gosling, Rachel McAdams, the legendary James Garner, James Marsden in this movie, and Kevin Connolly.
Lovey.
This is a nice little run for Kevin Connolly.
Yeah, it was.
Entourage.
I got a statement about him, too, in this.
Me okay. too.
Some production notes before we get to our statements. To prepare for the part, Ryan Gosling temporarily moved to Charleston, South Carolina prior to filming.
Method actor.
During his 2 months there, he rode the Ashley River and made furniture. A nationwide search was conducted to find the right actress to play Allie. Actresses who auditioned for the role included Jessica Biel, Ashley Judd, Reese Witherspoon, and Britney Spears.
Thank God.
Rachel McAdams was ultimately cast. Mm-hmm. The script caught the attention of director Steven Spielberg in 1998, who wished to film the movie with Tom Cruise as Noah Calhoun. Mm-hmm. And then his schedule got wonky, so it got passed on to a different director. And then early in development, George Clooney was going to play Noah with Paul Newman as the older Noah.
That would have been great.
But after Clooney watched some Paul Newman movies, he went up to Paul and said, we don't look enough alike to pull this off.
Although, man, like Clooney and Paul Newman, that would be a great duo right there, dude. That is awesome.
I don't know. I almost feel like, it's hard in retrospect now, but I almost feel like you needed someone. George Clooney looked like a man in 2000. Yeah. Right? He was already on ER. You needed like a boyish charm.
Yeah.
And Gosling at that point in time was not a breakout star yet. So
no, he was.
It actually worked. Yeah,
Remember the Titans, but he wasn't one of the main stars.
Right.
The director wanted someone unknown and, quote, not handsome to portray Noah. He
That's
therefore cast Ryan Gosling in the role.
That's my favorite part. But he's not really, you know what? He hadn't become sort of chiseled yet.
No, he was definitely not the jacked up,
yep,
crazy, stupid love version of Ryan Gosling.
Yep, exactly.
McAdams had a relationship with her Notebook co-star Ryan Gosling from 2005 through 2007. So this mm-hmm. movie sparked a 3-year romance between these two mm-hmm. in real life.
But it might be in your notes where they hated each other during the filming of this.
Oh, I did not.
And Gosling actually at one point said, can you get someone else to read lines with me? Because so he's like a method actor, right? So like he's like big into the method, and she was young, but she's good too. So yeah. They did not get along at all and got into screaming matches. And at one point, the director finally said, you two are going to sit in a room and work this out.
I wonder if he was method acting, because that's what their relationship was too, right?
I was just about to say that. It's going to take some work. It's going to be hard.
Yep.
So, okay, and then one more thing for you guys here, that this was the middle of an incredible run of movies for Rachel McAdams that put her on the map as one of the biggest actresses in the world. Mean Girls, The Notebook, and Wedding Crashers. Bang, 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 all within a year and a half.
Mean Girls is still one of my favorites.
Family Stone was in that era too, and that's like my favorite Christmas cry movie of all time. Not just Christmas, just my favorite cry movie of all time.
Then she might be knocking on the door of Mount Rushmore of rom-com or romantic movie actresses. She was also in The Vow with what's his name from Channing Tatum.
Yep.
And then in a couple other movies too. So All right. So with that, let's unleash a few rounds of statements about this movie. We'll go around the room. Judd, me, Declan. Let's go Judd, Declan, me, actually.
Okay. Okay.
Judd, you go ahead. You go first.
My first statement is this. So I'm going to go.
There we go.
I'm going to go right for the heart of this film, because when I told Dawn that I was assigned to watch this film, she's like, oh no, don't watch it. You cannot. They're spoofing you. They're clowning you because you are going to cry so hard. Now, I am a guy who starts crying. I've got in It's a Wonderful Life, I have like a part where I start to cry and I don't stop till it's done. Okay. So Dawn's like, you're going to be a mess. You are going to be like this year, okay. Christmas Eve, I literally stood in front of the TV and was sobbing from like a certain point of
It's Judd.
A Wonderful Life to the end. And I'm proud of that. Like
Toy Story 3 is like
Toy
that
Story
for
3,
me.
Huge crier. I have. Oh, the end of Toy Story 3 killed me.
There's the part where the toys are in the incinerator and they think they're all going to die.
One affected me more than the last.
But when he gives the toys to the little girl and he's like, oh my God.
The music. Ugh.
So anyway, she's like, you can't watch this. And so then she said, okay, if you're going to watch it, you got to watch it with me. So I'm like, okay. So Sunday we watched this film and my statement is this. I didn't come close to crying until the very end, which I did cry at, with Garner and his wife dying. And at the end, I cry. There was nothing about the McAdams Gosling stuff that even caused me to mist up.
Which part specifically toward the end? Was it by the way, there's a delete. I don't know what version you saw, but there are some deleted scenes depending on the version. At the very end.
Saw the very end.
Where they are actually dead in the Netflix, bed together. Okay.
Netflix chopped that, but I rented this for $4. So I got them being dead. I started to tear up when they're in the courtyard of the home and the kids come and they basically say, these are his kids, but not yours. And you're like, yeah, the story was not hard to deduct. Okay. And then the kids are like, Dad, just come home. Mom doesn't know us. She doesn't know you. And he's like, wherever your mom
is. Dude, they had her in a cage at one point. Senior living situation puts people in cages?
Long story short, I was hoping to cry for some of the Gosling McAdams stuff, and I never did. So I am a huge Garner fan. James Garner is one of my favorites. So I did cry there. But I expected, because like a good cry is great. I expected to purge more, and I really didn't purge nearly as much as I was promised.
Wow. Wow. Okay. All right. So Judd's emotionless Judd enjoying this movie for the first
time. No, Garner stuff at the end I did, but I thought some of the kids' stuff would cause me to cry a little bit, and I didn't even come close.
Okay. Dex, what's your first statement? Right.
So I did not cry, shockingly. I can cry at a lot of different scenes in movies. And obviously the things, you know, and all of us are in the club. Like, I think dead parents are the things that probably, you know, trigger my like emotional stuff and movies. But in terms of like romantic things like this, I don't cry, but I do obviously feel a lot of different emotions. So my statement was, that was the heaviest ending I have ever seen in a movie.
Dude, it is nuts. When she snaps into it for 5 minutes and then he is like, she goes away.
That scene alone,
it's beautiful.
Scene alone where she has to be subdued and he is just weeping. And clearly you deduct that he does this probably every single day for maybe the 90. You know, he says, well, last time we only got 5 minutes. He does this for maybe what? Every day to read this book, to hopefully get 1 minute of her and him together. They remember with her dementia and just those last 15 minutes. From that scene, and yeah, I had the DVD included them going to bed together, and then the nurse wakes up to find that they're both gone. Just that last 10 to 15 minutes was some of the heaviest things I have ever experienced and watched in a movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah, dude, it was
great. Production note, there is a scene, it got cut, explaining the book.
Yeah.
The notebook is explained. But they basically decided it didn't help the film, right. which was long. So they cut the scene out. So we don't know how it was created, and they decided we didn't need to know that.
So Kelsey loves Jordan Sparks, who's the author of the actual book, I believe, I don't know, of like thousands of books like this. And in the book, they claim that they are, he has actually cancer, I believe, in the book. So he has like heart issues in the movie. But he has cancer in the book. And instead of them dying together, you're assuming they die together. There's a sequel to The Notebook. I believe it's called The Wedding. And in The Wedding, you learn that one of the kids is getting married and he is still alive and she has passed on.
Oh.
So it's okay, completely so like different.
Alternate.
Yes, it's completely different.
Oh, I like this.
I don't know
more
if I just spoiled the entire vibe of this movie, but I learned that afterwards from my fiance who told me that.
Okay. All right. My first statement's going to be a hot take.
All right.
I think I know where you're going to go.
Allie made a mistake. She should have married Lon instead. Dude, he wasn't even unlikable. You thought when you're watching this movie, you're like, oh, it's going to be the snobby rich guy, right, that she's going to find. He's charming. He's funny. He is rich. He's self-aware. Because he even goes through, when he proposes to her at that ball or whatever it was, the jazz band playing, he even he's like, you know, I am exactly, and he says it in kind of a fun tongue-in-cheek way, I am exactly what your parents want you to marry. And you're having a hard time with that because it would end your rebelliousness against your parents. It's like the end of 8 Mile where he's giving her the, I know everything you have to say about me. And then she winds up, I mean, my God, like if your fiance or your wife calls you and says, or steps into your office or whatever and says, hey, honey.
Yeah.
Cryptically, by the way, with tears in her eyes and says, quote, I need to get away for a bit and take care of a few things.
Yeah.
And then leaves and doesn't respond to your phone calls or anything.
Yes.
And like the level of patience that Lon showed throughout this whole ridiculous saga. Dude, she made a huge mistake by not marrying Lon. That's my take.
His recovery, too, is one of the most remarkable recoveries in this. Yeah. I mean, the man is in a full body cast.
Yeah.
And the next time you see him, he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm back. I'm back. Lon's back.
And how disrespectful of her. She looks over and she recognized him.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't even give him the time of day until he asks her something. The level of emotional maturity
that's
from
her
Lon
game. That's
compared
her game.
To Allie.
She's a hard-to-get gal. She's not going to,
Next statement?
She needs therapy, quite frankly, is what.
We'll follow yours perfectly. Flat out, Allie ain't a good person. Allie is not a good person. She's manipulative. Dude. She is thoughtless. She is, and look.
Might I add, terrible driver. Allie is a terrible driver. She crashes into the fence at one point. She almost gets into a head-on collision down that country road.
You're right. Good point. Yeah.
You figure it out.
But she's not a good person. I mean, she strings along Lon. She strings along Noah at times. Now it does make sense because her parents are despicable too. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, she is not like Rachel McAdams is incredibly cute. And at times, her characters have been sweet, and at times they're not. But and I feel like you were supposed to think this person that she was playing in Allie was sweet. She is not a good person. She is, dare I say it, conniving.
Dude, she's like physically violent. She was at one point, and they fight, you know, whatever. But she was like punching him and stuff.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, so she's got her choice between, again, this stand-up, mature, good-looking, well-off, put-together, patient, self-deprecating guy, Lon.
Who recovered from nearly being dead.
Right. He's got life perspective. I don't. At no point did the movie even attempt to paint him as like a sleazy, bad, rich guy. Which, you know, if you look at some of the other tropes, like the movie Titanic, right? You're choosing between, what's her name, is choosing between Leonardo DiCaprio, who's kind of the scrappy Ryan Gosling figure, and then her rich, snobby fiance, who's just an ass. And the movie's making it very clear. She could be with the rich guy, but he's insufferable. The rich guy in this movie is not insufferable. Dude, Ryan Gosling is a schlep. He's unkept. He's cantankerous. He's kind of a loser. He's just kind of desperately, he's going to build the house the way that Allie wants it in hopes that she comes back someday. It's like,
but you know what's weird about that?
Choosing Lon over this guy?
But you know what's weird about that? Noah is a schlep who at times is portrayed, probably rightfully so, as having a bad temper. But his patience with her doesn't always make sense.
Well, he was patient for like 7 years, right?
Well, he's, yeah. but I mean, she'll be screaming and yelling, and he's just his character actually to me didn't track well. Hers did track. I just didn't like her. But his character at times, because he'd be incredibly patient with her and patient about things, and then the next thing he'd be like throwing a chair off a deck. He was so mad about something. It's like, so who is this character?
Dude, the other thing too, and just in terms of comparing, well, so one of the scenes where Allie comes to the realization that maybe I'm leading the wrong life, right? Maybe I'm with the wrong person. And she says to Lon, I used to paint. I don't paint anymore. And she's realizing, like, I'm just becoming a different person. And he goes,
yes,
you should paint. He's like, I love you. You should you should absolutely paint. You know, I'm not stopping you from painting. I'm not telling you to be someone you're not. You should go paint. But maybe he needed to go the extra step that Noah went and actually devote a painting room for her, even though she doesn't live there. So, anyways, all right, Dex.
All right, we'll continue down this road. My statement is James Marsden is shockingly okay with this decision.
Yeah.
Like, just
yes,
really yes. Okay with this. And here's where I'm at, because part of me is like, well, shouldn't you want to fight for her more and be way more upset at Noah and all this stuff? Because, yeah, your now fiance has been cheating on you and she's gone back to her first love and all this stuff. But then I'm also like, to your point of like, well, you know what? Maybe this dude's just a really good human being. And he was like, all right, if I can't have you for myself, then it's not worth having you, which is like an incredible, humble way to. He says, I can do three things. I could shoot him and kill him. I could beat him up, but that won't help anything. Or I won't be able to have you because you're in love with somebody else. He is shockingly okay with this decision. And it also
blows my
mind.
What would you
do
if you're him? Like, is there another option? I mean, obviously shooting him doesn't seem like.
So what made no sense, though, is she literally disappears. She stops returning his calls. She's clearly not at her hotel because he's calling it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't, like, go check for, as far as I could tell from the film, for, like, 4 days.
Because
he's finally on his way.
He's being patient, giving her space.
But no man has that type of patience. If you love somebody, I'm not saying that you do something stupid, but you're proactive.
Yeah. So, like, what would you, if Don said to you cryptically and said, hey,
I would have been much more proactive.
I just need to get away for a little while and handle some things. So I'll just be back when I'm back. Would you just be like, okay?
Or no. At that age, no way. Now I'd be like, okay, bye.
Bye.
I'd be like, okay, have fun in Iowa. We'll see you later. Hey, Stella, let's go watch some sports. But this is 30 years of marriage. But I'm talking about at that age. I mean, you guys, you know, when you're 22, 23 in love. And then she just, and I'm not saying it's going to work out, okay? So I'm not saying that you do something stupid, but aren't you more proactive in like being like, wait,
well,
what's wrong? What's wrong? You're just going to leave?
But I think I have learned, you know, when you're in your late teens, early 20s, sometimes the worst thing you can do is be too proactive or be too smothering or too, what are you doing? Sure. Why are you doing this? Why? And now all of a sudden you're weird, needy, and clingy. And so maybe Lon is, you know, Lon knows he has options.
He's really not that in love. He's just like, I like you.
He's doing the right thing. He's giving his gal some space. Hey, listen, if you need to clear your head,
she abuses
this is a big life decision.
Like a schlep.
Yeah, well, like she told on herself. It was the best thing that could have happened to Lon. I'd love a sequel. 20 years later, I need a sequel. I want to know what happened with Lon. He probably found a much better, more loving, caring,
stable situation. He probably died of those terrible injuries he suffered in WW2.
He's got a peg leg.
Hey,
now.
I'm back. But weren't you in a body cast like a week ago?
All right, back to Judd.
Okay, all right, on to Kevin Connolly's.
Let's do it.
Character, okay. I have always been, and this time I've decided to come up with a solution. Okay, so when this franchise started, and as you said, they're all available now, probably for the first year or so, you can hear me bitching about length of the film and runtime, and you could have cut it. And I would always say I can find ways to cut it, but I feel now I didn't come with solutions. Okay, Kevin Connolly's character,
Ben.
Why as a whole? And by the way, he's fine. This is not a rip on him. Why as a whole did they even bother with the war scene where he dies? Because it is the quickest.
Well, you needed to know, I think you needed to know why he wasn't part of the rest of the movie, right?
I agree with that. But what you could have done was just, when he was done with his initial parts in acting, said, Kevin, thank you very much. You're done. We're going to kill you, and we'll tell people we killed you. The scene, it's almost like a spoof
they
scene.
Did, but they did tell people that they killed him visually. That's what happened.
I know, but what I'm saying, we didn't need the scene. It was almost like a comedy. It was so quick. Like, he just, like, and first of all, Ryan Gosling's character, Noah, who's right there, he's fine. Like, he's just like, oh, and he looks at Conley, his best friend, laying there, dying in the snow, and he's just sort of like, eh. And then that's the end of the scene.
His reaction makes no sense. His reaction was very meh to his best friend dying.
The scene was meh. Why did we need the scene?
Because, well, you needed the scene for the main reason you needed the scene was just to put Noah through some adversity.
Yeah.
You needed to know that Noah was down and out, depressed. He lost his gal. He lost his best friend. And now he's going to focus in on his one mission, which is I'm going to rebuild this house. My life is in shambles. I'm going to lean into the thing that I know, and I'm going to rebuild this house.
That was the trope. I would argue it made it worse when his best friend is dead and he looks at him dead in the snow and goes, nah. And then the next scene is he comes home to his dad, which is the only scene that you need.
And then his dad dies. Like that, they're trying to stack
right.
up. But his life is a series of tragedies, and that's what they
I understand that. All I'm saying is we didn't need the visual of like 10 seconds in the snow. He could have just come home to his dad and been crying about his best friend.
How would you have told
dead.
The audience?
I would have had him come home, but I wouldn't have shown him. I wouldn't have shown.
But how would
Noah
you have told
character.
The audience that Finn died? What's your alternative?
Because he would have come home upset to his dad, and his dad would have said, I'm so sorry about Finn. And giving him a hug, and then we could have got through it. I just thought the scene was a complete waste of time. They did it in 10 seconds. And then he went to war. Bang, his best friend's dead. And then they're back. Nah.
Also, come on. Right. According to Wikipedia, they die in the Battle of the Bulge in World War II, that's like one of the last true gasps by Germany. So... Mm-hmm. You know, they listen to that radio. There's been an act of war. You know, they're listening to that. And then they say what? They're in Africa for 2 years. And then all of a sudden, they're in the Battle of the Bulge. Well, like, wasn't World War II? Yeah, like, it was 6 years. Okay. I'm just saying the timeline doesn't make, like, a whole lot of sense there of if they were
in
Africa for a little bit.
Well, not everyone fought for all 6 years. Like, you would go and put in a couple years of duty or whatever.
I'm saying that they're clearly listening to the announcement that, all right, World War is about to happen. And then all of a sudden, it's 6 years between that moment and the Battle of the Bulge. It just seems...
No. Well, very few people fought for 6 years in World War II. So
I'm just saying the battle that they picked for them to die, I don't think makes sense from the time they hear the war and then all of a sudden they've been in it for six.
We're just trying to clean the script up a little bit here. We're just trying to help.
I understand the enlistment process.
But I hear you. I feel like they could have explained it cleaner and gotten the same effect. Because when Conley's character dies, it's not like I'm like,
we get
oh
it.
My goodness. Okay. I'm trying to clean this film up.
Okay, back to the... I know we're kind of out of order here, but back to the relationship. Here's my next statement. This is one of the most toxic, codependent relationships I have ever seen in my life. And I made like a running list of examples. First of all, this relationship starts, if you remember, with Noah threatening to kill himself by jumping off a Ferris wheel if Allie doesn't agree to a date.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll let go. I will... He didn't say it, but like, I will kill myself if you don't agree to go on a date with me. Okay, wow, that's really weird. Mm-hmm. And then once the whole thing kind of ends, Noah devotes his whole life to rebuilding the house in case Allie were to come back. He builds the porch around the house just like Allie wanted. He gets the piano ready in case Allie comes back. He made a painting room in case Allie comes back. Before that, he guilt trips her for maybe wanting to go to college in New York, right? Which is a very just sort of toxic, codependent thing.
And her parents
she's physically assaulting him during their arguments. So I just like, boy, the whole relationship just makes you feel like, and even he's like, this is what we do. We fight 99% of the time. You're a pain in the ass, but I still want to go through this, even though all we do is yell at each other and fight. So just very toxic. Very
tough. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and her parents set a really bad example too. Her mom at the end basically says, you know, I gave up on my life.
Dude, actually, quick statement on top of a statement since you brought this up. Allie's mom is creepy. So she admits, over the last 20 years, I'll just drive up to the coal mine and stare at my ex-boyfriend as he glistens in the sun.
And
it's like,
father.
He looks over and her car is parked about 12 feet away. It's like, he very clearly sees you, ma'am, and probably has for the last 10 or 15 years. You're not being inconspicuous. You're just like parked in your convertible or whatever it was, clearly staring at this guy. So
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
My statement is, so I'm actually going to disagree with a little bit here, because I think Ryan Gosling is incredibly smooth and calculated with what he's doing. The entire process of trying to chase her and get her to go on the date with her.
It's manipulative, though. It's all just disgusting.
I wouldn't say it's disgusting. It's not disgusting what he's doing.
He's wants trying to kill himself. You don't go on a date with me or I will kill myself.
And then she still says no. And then he still figures out a way, all right, I'm going to go on this double date to the movies. And then also, like, you know, screw getting in this car with two people that were making out the entire film. Let's have a walk. And then I'm going to let you in on a little bit of how we can make this fun little date night work for them. And everything works. And also the whole New York scene, they're at the dinner and the mom kind of being a bee is like, oh, yeah, she's going to school in New York. And she's like, well, you haven't told me that. It's like, because she just figured out that day and it's 1942. And we haven't told you anything yet. So actually, I don't think he's a schlep. I understand he doesn't come from money. No, he's not a schlep. He's not a schlep. He doesn't come from money, but her parents
do anything.
Her parents have zero reason to dislike him. They have zero reason to dislike him. If he was being a menace and dragging her out and doing bad things, that's different. Her parents have a complete irrational dislike towards him.
No, they're rich. They're rich and they don't think that he's good enough for their kid
financially. Like that's it.
Yeah,
though.
But I mean that's a reason not to like a boy.
That's
especially
it.
Back then.
I mean, if you were to poll America and say, all right, tale of the tape, here's Noah with his schleppy neck beard, and we don't even know what he's like. He makes like 20 cents an hour or whatever it is at the mines, right? And here's Lon next to each other. All right, women of America. Who would you rather spend your life
and
with?
Moms and dads, right? Because like her parents are wealthy and rich, and she lived a lifestyle that her parents thought that she should. I mean, and back then that carried a lot of weight. Like that makes sense, but I mean, that
I disagree.
Make
I don't think he's a schlep. I don't, and I think her parents have a irrational disdain towards him that's not justified.
But it's justified by how much he's not worth. Like that's what people base stuff on that. Like the rich
especially
people.
Especially in the
1940s. Yeah. Let's go see DiMaggio. Let's go see DiMaggio today. The Yankee Clipper.
Okay. Back to Judd.
All right. My final statement is this, and it's very clear cut. And I'm going to do a callback to a film that we have done previously and say this. Allie Mills over Allie Calhoun any day of the week.
Was that Allie Karate Mills, Kid Alley?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Elizabeth Shue over Rachel McAdams is great, but as far as the characters go, give me Allie Mills any day.
Are there any other Allies in rom-coms or romantic movies? Can we put together a full Allie ranking? Maybe that's your homework assignment at some point. Find all the Allies.
Are there a lot of people with that name? It feels like it's not that popular.
Oh, Allie's a very popular, very popular name.
I'll find out. I'm just saying the Karate Kid, Elizabeth Shue Allie, way better than this Allie.
Okay. I don't know. I think I probably agree with that. I have a question for you guys instead of a statement here. Would you, so the James Garner older version of Noah, would you do what he did for your Alzheimer or dementia stricken spouse?
You know,
or how long would you continue doing this for your Alzheimer stricken? I asked my wife last night and I think she said like a month. She'd give me like a month.
Dawn has no patience.
And then after that, it's like, all right.
So I'd be screwed. Like Dawn has no patience. So I'd be out. Would I do it? You know what? When I was in my 30s, I would have said no way. As you get older, you get a little bit softer about things. I can't guarantee I wouldn't know. I'd still be inclined to say I probably wouldn't, but I can't say for sure that I wouldn't because I think what partially made me cry was the basis of that portion of the film and those two actors was incredibly believable. Like the McAdams Gosling thing to me, I guess I just didn't totally buy in. But with those two, I actually did. And I can't guarantee I wouldn't do that.
I like to say I would, but I don't think I would. I think I would love to say that, yes, course I would. And I'm sure my fiance
But you go
is,
see her a bunch,
yes,
right?
Of course I would. But his,
yeah, I mean,
like we said in the opening statement, I mean, he's reading this book to her every single night with the hopes of I can get 60 seconds of us back together. And he continues doing that.
If she forgets who you are, I'll tell you this. So my grandfather,
too, which is not Alzheimer's.
Right. She has dementia. Yep. Yes. So my grandfather, who's still alive, he's 95 years old. It was my step grandma. So his remarried wife, she had, I think it was dementia for several years and it got progressively worse. And eventually she had to go into a nursing home, but he lived still at their home. He spent 2 years in his early 90s driving 25 minutes a day to go hang out with her every single day. And he would wear the same hat so that he was recognizable. And there's a couple, she wouldn't recognize a lot of, later on, once she got, real close to the end, he was the only one that she would kind of recognize. But he did it. I mean, for him, it was like, I'm 90, I'm 92 years old. What else am I going to do? This is my ride or die. I'm going to go be there for her, you know?
I love that. And that's what I'm saying is I think that because it's impossible to put yourself in that position right now. Like for Dex, he's not like, if this happened tomorrow, I'm going to be. But if it happens when you're 80 or,
that's a Twins game. I don't know.
I
got a podcast to record.
And I'd be like,
I got to go to Meadows at Mystic and play
Gossman's
some golf.
Pitching for the Blue Jays tonight, Don. Just hang on. But anyway, that's beautiful, though. That's really cool.
How many? Okay, another one for you guys. How many? So Noah wrote 365 letters, one a day for a year, and Allie never wrote back. How many letters would you write? And it's 1940, so the only way to get a hold of someone is to write a letter. How many letters would you write without hearing back until you stopped writing letters?
Two. I mean, I wouldn't have done it. No.
Two? I'd give it at least
at that age?
I'd probably give it four or five.
Yeah.
Four or five.
I think it's way too difficult to put yourselves in that shoes and assume because now that we're so used to what we have now at our disposal, there is certainly a game to not responding to someone or responding with spamming. There's a game involved with that on both sides that I can't really even answer how it would be in the only way of communication is to hand write a letter and also just
you don't respond to their first two letters, but if they send a third one, then
exactly,
you write back.
There's something involved with that, so I think it's way too difficult.
By the way, this just occurred to me. So if Clooney told Newman, who were both really very very handsome men, we don't look enough alike. Do we really think that Gosling and Garner did?
You know what? I could kind of see it a little bit. I could see it a little bit.
Okay, because it's supposed to be, you know, I get there's a huge, huge gap there. I guess, too, part of the stuff I read said Gosling actually, because he was young and impressionable at the time, went to Gardner at the outset, and they, like, he wanted to sit down with Gardner and talk about accents, because obviously he affected one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what accent was Gardner going to use? Gardner goes, son, I don't do those, so do whatever you want.
Oh, wow, that's hilarious.
Go away.
So Gosling was like this very serious studio.
I'm going to go live there. Time. I'm going to go build furniture that's going to be used on the set. And yeah. Garner's like, I'm going to parachute in it and do my stuff. You do what you want.
Yeah. Peace out, kid. All right. Any other final statements from you guys before we get to the categories here?
I don't think so.
Thought I'd try more.
All right. Let's get to the definitive relationship rankings here. The criteria is very simple. It's chemistry among the main relationship characters. And it's a 1 to 10 scale. So last week we gave out our first ever 10, and it was unorthodox. We gave it to Jacob and Cal in Crazy Stupid Love, because that was the main relationship in the movie. That was a straight 10. Hitch and Sarah from Hitch, an 8.8. Joe Fox and Kathleen Kelly from You've Got Mail, 8.3. Tied with Benjamin Barry and Andy Anderson from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, an 8.3. So we'll start with Judd. How would you grade on a 1 to 10 scale the chemistry between Noah and Allie?
I've got a question. How am I doing this, given that there were two sets of characters here? So there's Gosling and McAdams, and then obviously there's Garner and his wife. Am I like?
Well, I mean, I think you include. I mean, you have snapshots of their whole.
To me, there's a very, very different.
I think it's Gosling and Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, we're not grading on like when Allie loses her memory freaks out.
No, but the chemistry.
James Garner.
But the chemistry there is fantastic, because I thought that those two characters were far more believable than the young ones. So if I'm just doing the younger couple, I'm giving them a 5.
What? Whoa.
I've 5. I didn't think it was that good. Didn't impress me that much. Didn't cry. Didn't really
This is not about crying. It's about chemistry. Their chemistry is undeniable. 5?
Their connection in the movie.
I didn't think it worked that well. I didn't think of I got to buy in. I am the person watching it. I didn't buy in that much. I didn't think that they were that good.
So
you think
their chemistry was worse than Ben and Lindsay from Fever Pitch? Lucy and Jack from While You Were Sleeping, where one of them was in a coma for half the movie?
I thought it was two actors hired to play roles. 5.
What?
Dude.
I'm totally down on them.
Hottest and I just potentially worst movie take I have heard from you, I think.
I like
this.
It.
Is also one of the most iconic movie relationships in cinematic history.
Which is why I went in with an expectation that it would be far superior. I thought it was very average. Gosling, in my opinion, is good. He's not great there. I mean, obviously by the film that we did last week, Crazy Stupid Love, he had become really, really good. McAdams, I thought, was bristly. I know. I'm giving him a 5. I didn't think that they were that good.
I think you're confusing the likability versus chemistry. Because I can understand the likability of them, like, you know, not being like anything that's incredible.
What I'm saying,
they freaking, first of all, I'll just jump in. It's a 10 for me.
Yes.
It's a 10 for you.
Yes.
They died together in bed at a nursing home. They loved each other so much.
My problem is I didn't buy anything until the end, and that is going to the chemistry has to work for me. 5.
It's a 5.
That is
the biggest discrepancy in the history of Rom-Com Rewind. It means it's an 8.3. It ties them for third. Dex, go ahead. I jumped on you, so go ahead.
It's 10. It's a hard 10. They from the moment they fall in love so quickly, they're yes, it's teenage love, so it's a little bit more like over the top and obnoxious, and a film's going to make it look even more on top of that. But then they come back to each other as adults. She leaves her fiance to be back with them because her chemistry is so strong with Noah. I don't understand how you could possibly think that their chemistry is only 5 out of 10. Yeah.
And by the way, they're on screen, so I think there's like chemistry of the characters and there's on screen chemistry of the actors.
Yeah. Yep.
The on-screen chemistry of the actors part of it, it became one of the most iconic pairings in movie history. And they were together in real life for 3 years after they were done filming.
But they did not get along during the filming. The writer of the book should have been very disappointed with the portrayal of the characters.
Britney Spears would have given you a higher grade.
The chemistry, Ryan Gosling and Britney Spears together on the Mickey Mouse Club had as much chemistry as these two did. They get a 5 from me. I did not enjoy their acting. And I did not enjoy their chemistry. And I thought on paper, it should have been far better than it ended up being.
What a take. All right. So, and again, this isn't really a rom-com. It's a rom, but it fits in our, it's a rom-com rewind. It's on the fringes.
There's no calm to death at the end.
So, man. Okay. So now we're getting to the, entertainment value of the movie here rankings on a 1 through 10 scale. The only 10 we've given in rom-com rewind of the 12 that we've done so far is Crazy Stupid Love. Hitch and 10 Things I Hate About You were both a 9. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days was an 8.8. You've Got Mail, Why You Were Sleeping, Sleepless in Seattle, all above a 7. And then to round it out, the last 5 are 51st Dates, Fever Pitch, She's Out of My League, Sweet Home Alabama, all above a 6. My Best Friend's Wedding, a 5.3 is our lowest.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll start with Judd.
I am going to give this film a 6.5.
Man, you are really out on this movie.
Yeah, I didn't think I thought the majority of this film was not that great.
6.5. I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I'm going to give it a solid 7.5, though. It's not like my favorite film. Mm. It's not like, I always think about when I do these rankings too of, if I have cable or if I was in a hotel room, am I going to stop and watch this movie?
Not a chance.
And I don't think I would do that a lot. That being said, I do think it's a good movie. It is good. So it's a 7.5 for me. That's where I'm at.
All right. I gotta be honest. Like, this is a movie that I will stop and watch. There's just something. I love me some Ryan Gosling. I have a huge actress crush on Rachel McAdams over the years. And this is a movie that it gets me to well up a couple different times. It's got great legendary actors and actresses in some cases. It gets me to watch. It evokes emotion. It's a 9 for me.
Wow.
It's a 9 for me. I am a stand for The Notebook. And that means, let's see here, 23 divided by 3. That makes it a 7.7. A 7.7 for us here, collectively tying it with You've Got Mail. So
that's fair.
There you go.
Both films I wouldn't stop on.
Well, I don't know that you'd stop on many of the rom-coms. I feel like we're forcing you to watch rom-coms against your will here.
Oh, no. Rom-coms I actually like a lot. Like Hitch is great. Okay. Clearly Crazy Stupid Love I think is fantastic. I just felt that this film ended up being a little bit too trite for my tastes.
Okay. I mean, hell, it's a 54% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, critics align kind of with Judd on this movie. So, all right, there it is. That's The Notebook, a way too deep dive into The Notebook. Next week, we go back to our sports roots for the movie rewind franchise here. Jerry Maguire from 1996.
Show me the money.
Starring Tom Cruise.
We got some Tom Cruise. Zellweger. Finally, let's some Cruise. It.
So Jerry Maguire from 1996, and again, if you could subscribe to the Movie Reviews with Mackie and Judd podcast feed on Apple or Spotify, give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. We can grow that thing, and you can go back and binge now the 88 different movie reviews that we have done going back to March of 2020. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.